10 a.m. We've got a quorum. Is that right? Okay. So go ahead and call the meeting to order. Do we take attendance?
The acting chair, Mr.
Matt Baca.
Matt Baca.
Of the Office of the Attorney General.
Secretary of State, Secretary of State's office, Christina Espinosa is not in. The Honorable Brian Kwan.
Present.
Mr. Daniel Cordova.
Present, thank you.
Mr. Kenneth Ortiz.
I'm present, thank you.
And Ms. Deborah Garcia Rodrigo, Secretary, Department of Cultural Affairs or designee.
Okay, thank you, Georgette. So we'll move on now to the approval of the agenda, which was distributed in accordance with the rules. Can I take a motion to approve the agenda?
So moved.
Is there a second?
Second.
All in favor of approval of the agenda?
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay. Moving on to approval of the minutes of the meeting of February 19, 2019, which was a regular commission meeting. Those meeting minutes were distributed. Does anybody have any comments or any amendments to the minutes? Okay, hearing none, can I take a motion to approve the meeting minutes of the February 19, 2019 meeting?
So moved.
Is there a second?
Second, with one comment.
Yes, sir.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Director, the one thing that I would ask is that we close the loop with our auditor to make sure that they corrected their presentation to us, but there were some formatting errors and some cut and paste mistakes in there, and I wanted to make sure that our final record reflected the amended presentation.
Great. With that comment, there's a motion and a second. All in favor of approval of the minutes?
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay. The minutes of February 19, 2019 are approved. So our first agenda item, we will go into the public rule hearing on two rules today. So with that, the hearing will come to order. I'm Matt Baca, Secretary of the State Commission of Public Records. I'll be acting as the hearing officer for this rule hearing. For the record, this hearing is being held on May 21st, 2019 in Santa Fe, New Mexico at the State Record Center and Archives located at 1209 Camino Carlos Rey. And the time is approximately 10:03 a.m. The purpose of this hearing is for the Commission of Public Records and the State Records Administrator to receive public comment on the following rulemaking. If I could have Ms. V. Hill present the First Amendment.
Good morning, members of the Commission. My name is Tanya Vigil. I am the Agency Analysis Bureau Chief with the State with the Commission of Public Records. For your consideration this morning, I am presenting an amendment to 1.21.2 NMAP, Retention and Disposition of Public Records. The concise explanatory statement for this amendment is as follows. Section 14-3-4F NMSA authorized the Commission to adopt regulations to carry out the purpose of the Public Records Act. Section 14-3-6 NMSA authorized the State Records Administrator to establish a records management program for the application of efficient and economical management methods to the creation, utilization, maintenance, retention, preservation, and disposal of official records. Section 844 is being amended to add toxicology to the title and description. For additional information, including rule promulgation authority, effective date of the rule, date of adoption of the rule, please see the transmittal form in your packet. The proposed amendment was noticed on April 9, 2019. The amendment has been reviewed by the State Records Administrator and the State Records Center and Archives Internal Review Committee and is respectfully submitted for your review and approval.
Thank you very much, Ms. Mayor. I think that'll be all. Mr. Ortiz, if you could present the Second Amendment, please.
Mr. Chair, members of the Commission, I've been asked by the State Records Administrator to present the amendments on 1, 13, 11, This amendment is pursuant to the change in law with respect to Senate Bill 118 that will become effective on July 1st, 2019. With regard to the exhibits that are in your packet, this amendment was published in a notice of hearing published in the New Mexico Register on April 9th, 2019 in issue 7 of volume 30. Also in the exhibits is the notice of the rule hearing that was posted on our website with a screenshot paper copy that's in the exhibit. The revised agenda for this meeting is exhibit C. There was an email to Legislative Council Service with the notice of the regular meeting and rulemaking as exhibit D. There was a posting to the Sunshine Portal with the notice of regular meeting and rulemaking listed in your packet as exhibit E. The email to agency heads, CROs, and RLOs dated April 9th, that's exhibit F that's in your packet. The proposed amendments that Ms. Vigil mentioned is exhibit G. The proposed, my proposed amendments to exhibit 11311 are exhibit H that are in the packet. Senate Bill 118, the final version signed by the governor, is exhibit I in the packet. And there was one comment received on this amendment. It is a four-page letter from the Rohde Law Firm. That is listed as exhibit J in the exhibit. Those are all of the exhibits that are presented for both amendments for your consideration on both of the hearings.
Thank you very much, sir. So this hearing is being conducted pursuant to, in accordance with, the provisions of the Public Records Act, Article 3, Section 14.3-1 through dash 24, NMSA 1978. The New Mexico Lobbyist Regulation Act regulates activities before state officials and rulemaking proceedings. The Secretary of State's office can be contacted for information and registration. Public notice of this hearing was advertised in the New Mexico Register, on the agency website, on the Sunshine Portal, posted on the public entrances of the Santa Fe and Albuquerque offices, and was sent to the Legislative Council Service for distribution. Copies of the proposed rules were available from the State Records Administrator's office, were posted on the agency's website, sent to the Legislative Council Service for distribution, and the Sunshine Portal. Copies of the proposed rulemaking are also available on the table located near the door. I'd just like to take a moment to remind everyone that's in attendance to assign the attendance sheet, which is outside the door, and which will later be entered as an exhibit into the record of this hearing. If I could please ask one of the folks sitting near the door to remind anybody that comes in after this to put their name on that, I greatly appreciate it. Let the record show that the members that were called during roll, with the addition of
Anita Chase for Deborah Garcia,
are present at this rulemaking. This is a formal proceeding that will be recorded. Anyone interested in a copy must make his or her own arrangements to purchase a copy from the State Records Administrator's office. In order to ensure that the proceedings are accurately recorded, only one person at a time will be allowed to speak. Any person recognized to speak regarding the proposed rulemaking is asked to identify themselves for the record each time you address the hearing officer, and to speak loudly and clearly so that the recorder can pick up your comments. The hearing will be conducted in the following manner. Mr. Hendricks will present exhibits. I, as the hearing officer, will rule on the admissibility of the exhibits offered for admission. Exhibits admitted into evidence are available for review by members of the public. However, exhibits may not be removed from the room. After Mr. Hendricks offers exhibits and their admission is ruled upon, I will open the hearing for comments from the audience. The Commission and State Records Administrator do not follow the rules of evidence, but shall, in the interest of efficiency, reserve the right to limit all testimony deemed irrelevant, redundant, or unduly repetitious. This decision will be made by me as the hearing officer. May I have a show of hands on the number of people who intend to testify or comment on the proposed rule? Okay. After a person has testified or offered comment, I will permit members of the audience to question that person. Any member of the audience wishing to question that person may do so after being recognized. Each person recognized to speak shall identify him or herself for the record. Comments offered will be considered in preparing the final amendment. They may or may not be incorporated in the final version, but they will be carefully considered. The volume of comments and the effect on the revisions will dictate the effective date of the amendment. Mr. Hendricks, at this time, do you have any exhibits to introduce into evidence?
Yes, Mr. Chair. Exhibit A is the notice of hearing published on April the 9th, 2019, in Volume 30, Issue 7 of the New Mexico Register. Exhibit B is the notice of the rule hearing is posted on the website, nmcpr.state.nm.us. Screenshot paper copy. Exhibit C is the revised agenda is posted on the website, nmcpr.state.nm.us, as posted outside the rule hearing room. Exhibit D is an email to the Legislative Council Service with notice of regular meeting and rulemaking. Exhibit E is posted to the Sunshine Portal with notice of regular meeting and rulemaking. Exhibit F is an email to agency head, CROs, and RLOs dated April 9, 2019. Exhibit G is proposed amendments to 1.2.1.2 in MAC retention and disposition of public records. It's a CPR rule. Exhibit H is a proposed amendment to 1.13.11 MAC access to public records, research in New Mexico archives, another CPR rule. Exhibit I is Senate Bill 118, an act relating to public records protecting the confidentiality of certain victims and of witnesses to certain crimes. Exhibit J is a comment from Rhoda Dickinson, Sloan, Aiken, and Rob, PA, on behalf of the New Mexico Foundation for Open Government, SCPR rule.
Okay, are there any other exhibits to enter into the record?
There are none.
Okay, then exhibits A through J are hereby admitted. At this time, proposed rulemaking will be introduced into the record, and the floor will be open for testimony and comments from the audience. Members of the audience may question each witness upon being recognized to speak. Would anyone wish to comment on the amendment to 1.21.2 NMAC retention and disposition of public records? Okay, seeing no hands, we will move on to the next item. Would anyone wish to comment on the amendments to 1.13.11 NMAC access to public records, research in the New Mexico archives? Yes, Mr. Ortiz.
Thank you again, Mr. Chair, members of the commission. My name is Matthew Ortiz. I was asked by the state records administrator to come up with the proposed amendments to 1.13.11, and I want to spend some time talking about the amendments, and I'm available to answer questions from you all or from the audience. First, as a bit of background, back in the fall of last year, former state records administrator struck an agreement with the judiciary to obtain into our archives certain case records, and so we have now in our possession, fair estimate would be over 2,000 case records from the New Mexico judiciary that are in our permanent collection. And so those case records and those court records are now our responsibility. In the legislative session, Senate Bill 118 proposed exceptions to the Inspection of Public Records Act, or IPRA. And Senate Bill 18, which is an exhibit, calls for the redaction of personal information for certain records that relate to particular crimes. Those crimes are, in essence, violent felonies, stalking, felonies that pertain to criminal sexual penetration. Also in that amendment to Senate Bill 118, there was also a call for redaction for any witnesses or victims of those said crimes. That law is to take place on July 1st. As a result of that law, and as a result of the possession that we now have of case records, we proposed the amendments to Rule 1.13.11. And so the amendments really pertain to two sections. The first amendment pertains to Section 11, which is basically restating that under the Inspection of Public Records, access to certain records is restricted. There is a proposed deletion of what is an old definition of an IPRA exception, because this section hasn't been changed since 2006. And then there is an additional language that says for certain law enforcement records, see the new section, Section 17, which is below. A new section, Section 17, is being requested that that talks about what the requirements would be for access to confidential records. Those requirements pertain to the certain law enforcement records that are referred to in Senate Bill 118. That was the intent. The requirements for accessing those certain confidential records are that the requester has to provide a valid form of photographic ID, a name, a valid physical and email address, a statement of intended use for the records, and the date of the request. If the archives determines that they do not have either the legal or staff capability to make the redactions that would be required for those records, the new Section 17 gives us the ability, gives us, the Record Center, the archives, the ability to ask the originating agency to make a determination on that case file whether or not redactions need to happen and whether or not those redactions actually occur. Currently, we are in a position where we would anticipate on July 1st, we would have requests for certain records that may fall under the exception under IPRA, and we would not have either the legal or staff capability to make a determination as to whether or not the redaction of the personal information would be necessary. And we think that the only agency that would be responsible for that would be the originating agency. And so that's the purpose behind Section 17. With respect to the public comment that we've received from the Foundation for Open Government, I think a lot of their points were valid. I believe that with respect to some of the substantive comments to the rule, if the commission were to decide that they did not like the vagueness of certain confidential and certain law enforcement records that are listed in Section 11, which is really a placeholder, a potential amendment would be to insert instead the actual statutes that are listed in the amendment in place of certain law enforcement records, so that it's clear on its face that what we're talking about here are those particular records for those particular crimes where redaction may be necessary. With respect to the comment about the requirement for photographic identification, I would raise two points. Number one, that language comes almost verbatim from existing language that's contained within the remainder of the rule 11311, where we ask in archives for a photographic ID for access to the archival materials, for access to film materials. That's been a standard request from the archives for at least 20 years, because those other sections have not been amended since at least 1996. And secondly, with respect to looking at an equivalent area, we follow what is also followed at the federal level, which is in the federal archives, if you go and look for certain materials, they ask for an ID and they ask for a statement of intent, which is similar to what we ask for. And so we believe that those are reasonable manners of ascertaining the identity of a person. We believe that it is consistent with the with an interpretation of the Inspection of Public Records Act. However, we do acknowledge that the interpretation that that the public comments made is also a valid interpretation, and it's not for us to make that call. And with that, that concludes my presentation, and I stand for questions from you or from members of the audience.
So we'll go to the board first. Are there any questions of Mr. Ortiz?
Can you tell me which area of IPRA it says, I know it was in the letter about not really needing to require photographic documentation, or what the letter was referring to in the sense that it's not needed, and it sort of was referring to the letter from Modi, in the IPRA where here's all you need to make a request.
Mr. Chair, designee for the Cultural Affairs Secretary, I don't have IPRA in front of me, and so I can't be the one to answer where in IPRA that position is taken. That would be for someone else to make.
Mr. Ortiz, are you aware of whether or not the New Mexico state statute enabling access to public records is equivalent or the same as the federal statute? Is that why New Mexico follows that?
Mr. Chair, Mr. Cordova, we have not done that analysis. However, I am just aware of the practice of whether or not our IPRA statute follows the Freedom of Information Act, the FOIA. That's a request that we haven't done.
Thank you.
Do you know the reason that state archives have the rule in place to ensure that ID was provided when certain records were requested? You said that has been standard practice for 20 years. You said it was just to confirm the identity of the person making the request. Was there any other reason? Or?
Mr. Chair, members of the commission, I would only be speculating because I am not, I'm not with the archives division. However, I have been told by archivists that it is standard practice when looking at archival materials that they always ask for the identity because of the necessary value that they place on some of the materials. And so it has been a standard practice that I've been aware of that they always ask for, not just for the name and identity of the person who is looking for materials, but also for a registration of those people who are accessing archival materials. And I believe that that's been the practice that we've had for some time now.
Mr. Ortiz, is a requester who's requesting to view material actually touching the actual originals, or do they receive a copy to inspect?
Mr. Chair, Secretary Ortiz, it's my understanding and my firsthand knowledge that when people ask for archival materials, just like you all get the gloves if you actually physically touch, that the archivist brings the box out on a particular request and that you're actually looking at the actual materials themselves when you're making a request.
Yes, sir. Mr. Chairman, Mr. Ortiz, I'm wondering if this is a little bit different though, because this really is the requesting of copies of documents, confidential or potential confidential documents and records. And that's a lot different than me asking to review film that is sensitive, photographic material and archival reproduction material. Duplication is fundamentally different under an IPRA request, would you agree?
Mr. Chair, Auditor Cologne, I believe that it is similar, and I do believe that when you're making copies of an original, what you're handling is the original document.
No question, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Ortiz, that's true, but the person who's provided the IPRA request or for copies of these records won't be the one that's making the copies, right? That will be the team here, unfortunately, in terms of labor load, but it'll be the team here that makes those copies. Isn't that correct?
Mr. Chair, Auditor Cologne, that is true in some respects. And in some respects, when requests come in for case records, the actual person making the request is actually looking at the original document as well. And so if we were to take a policy in which we were going to treat duplication of case files differently than we treat other archival materials, then I would agree with your question. However, it just depends. Sometimes prosecutors or defense attorneys or other people who are interested in case files will actually come in, will actually be physically handling the case files that are in record. It just depends upon the nature of the request.
And Mr. Chairman and Mr. Ortiz, from a practical standpoint, how does that look? Do they get the file, you put them in a room, and they're expected not to leave that room, and is someone with them during that review of the file?
Mr. Chair, Auditor Cologne, they are in the research room in the archives, and so yes, they are not allowed to take any of those materials out of the resource room. And if they, after looking at a file, they decide that they want copies of one or more documents within that file, then they would go through the duplication process.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Ortiz, are they accompanied by a staff person or are they there alone?
Mr. Chair, Auditor Cologne, they're not left alone. There's always an archivist on duty in the archive room.
So Mr. Chairman, Mr. Ortiz, I have to tell you that I think that based on what you've told me, based on the concerns about photo identification and the potential chilling effect on these case reviews, I am not inclined to support requiring photo identification. And I think Mr. Purcell's concerns are well stated. And I think that, unfortunately, we've entered into this agreement with the courts. I'm not sure this was a good deal. And I'm not sure that it was 100% appropriate, but I wasn't here at the time, so I don't have all the context. But I see this as a huge labor load for the team here. And I'm not sure that we're getting the resources that are going to be required to manage this labor load. And I think that, Mr. Director, Doctor, you're going to be charged with trying to identify a path forward on that. And that's not going to be easy, and it's unfortunate. So my first issue, and I want to, I will stay on this topic of photograph ID. I do have other issues, but I think if other people had photographic or issues with the subsection requiring photographic identification, we should probably stay on those.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
Mr. Ortiz? What's the effect, what's the practical effect of the commission here not passing a rule implementing Senate Bill 118 before July 1st?
Mr. Chair, Mr. Cordovo, the law is going to come into place on July 1st, and so we're going to be faced with, after July 1st, if requests come in that affect these kind of case files, we're going to be left with a process in which we have a rule that will be antiquated and a rule that may not give us the authority, the process within an authority via rule to determine how to treat requests and how to retreat those records that pertain to this request. And so we might be in a position after July 1st, if there is no change to 113.11, we may be in the position of just having to really assume the responsibility and potentially the liability for doing redactions on records that we may not be equipped to handle.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Ortiz, so the process now, I've been a visitor and been a participant in this process, but I just want to verify that my experience is the experience that everyone else has. Is there any inventory done by a staff member here at Archives before the box is given to the visitor and then again after to verify that actually nothing has left the box?
Mr. Chair, Mr. Cordova, not that I'm aware of. I don't believe that we have an ability to, except for having the archivist there while they're going through the box, we have no ability to either pre-handling or post-handling make a determination that the contents of whatever box is brought to you for review is the same as before. We just don't have that kind of staff capability for doing that.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Ortiz, so would you agree with me then that the reason for the photographic, or for the production and the presentation of photographic ID is to track who looked at which box for purposes of inventory control, or is there another reason?
Mr. Chair, Mr. Cordova, I believe that not just the request for showing an ID, but the actual registration of patrons in the archives is for the purpose of making sure that there is some way of tracking what I would consider a worst case scenario.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Ortiz, I think this is my last question on the photographic piece. So would this not then, given the introduction of new materials from the courts and the judiciary, be a good time for a complete revision or at least review of the policies of how we treat boxes that are sensitive?
Mr. Chair, Mr. Cordova, we have had preliminary discussions as staff at the direction of the State Records Administrator to look at a complete review of 113.11, and that's just not before us now. And so that would be something that would be advisable. We just didn't have the time when we brought this to the commission earlier to think about it in a more sort of holistic way. We were reacting to this new law and to the circumstance of us having case records and to the acknowledgement that we don't have the capabilities among staff to do the kind of redaction that this new exception is calling for.
Any other comments on the point of photo ID from the board? Any other comments in general? Sir?
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Ortiz, let me start by saying that it's a yeoman's effort that you and the team did such a great job on this in such a short period of time. We know when the bill was passed, and we know you tried to react quickly.
and that's commendable, and I think it was a job well done. I also want to thank the Foundation for Open Government and Mr. Purcell on their analysis of the proposed amendments. One of the real concerns I have that I think is a fair point, under our IPRA statute and the way it's been interpreted and applied, and I am not an expert, I'm required as the state auditor to come into full compliance with it. It's not something that isn't litigated often, and in fact, I'm currently in litigation over IPRA requests and whether or not I'm compliant, and so I'm not an expert. In fact, the two gentlemen to my left, my far left and my right, are far more, they have a lot more expertise than I do. But I will say that on its face, I'm a big believer in not having people who make requests under our IPRA statute provide a reason for that request. I don't think that's appropriate. I am a full supporter of that application in the IPRA statute, and I don't think that we should be providing those additional burdens or hurdles to any requests from the public to provide access. And so I just want to go on record and see how what our path forward is, but that is a big concern for me in the proposed amendments requiring an individual to state a purpose or reason for their request. I'm not comfortable with that at all. I don't think that the federal standards ought to be our template or our aspirational goal. I think in New Mexico, we have a recent history of trying to provide more access and not less access. And I think we should always embrace that spirit when possible. And I think that the two issues that have been brought up now at this point do just the opposite. And so that doesn't sit well with me. I do think, to your point regarding what happens if we don't pass, and I think that the staff is going to be charged to do the task of applying procedures that they see most appropriate based on the new legislation that was passed this most recent session. The final concern I have, and then I'll yield, which is, Mr. Chairman, Dr. Hendricks, I think that because of this agreement we've come into with the courts, we've now also asked you to be counsel. And when it comes to redaction, there are legal standards, and they are not easy. And they are not even clear. Forget the easy part, they're not clear. And I encourage you to, again, turn the Rubik's Cube a bit and find a path forward to either rely upon the people around this table and their teams to help find that path, because it's not going to be easy. A redaction isn't as simple as somebody reviewing a document and it's obvious what ought to be redacted. It's not. I struggle with it in my office, and I suspect you will struggle with it even more in your office. And the breadth of what you're going to be required to do based on this agreement that you entered into with the courts, I'm concerned. I'm empathetic, and I'm here to help, but I just want to caution us as we move forward, because this is not going to be an easy task. And maybe all this is for naught. Maybe we will get these requests few and far between. And if that's true, then maybe I'm just being an alarmist. But I suspect that we will get quite a few requests in the years ahead. So those are my concerns based on what I've seen and based on the good work done by Mr. Purcell and the Foundation for Open Government expressing their concerns. They are phenomenal advocates who I do respect.
Thank you very much, Mr. Auditor. Any other comments or questions from the board?
You know, Mr. Chair, I agree with Auditor Colon's comments about the requester information as well as the purpose. I think in the spirit of transparency, we should be able to provide those. But I have a question on subsection, I guess, C, where if state records determines that there could be personal protected information that the originating entity has to review those, how as far as the timing, because IPRA has a lot of timing associated with records responsiveness, how do you see that working and making sure that we're providing the records in a timely fashion?
Mr. Chair, Secretary Ortiz, subsection C, which is goes to the point really of what is the new section 17, says that our staff may request the originating agency to review. Obviously, if that request is made and those materials are sent to a requesting agency, we under IPRA, I think, would have an affirmative obligation to notify the person making the request that
additional time will be needed, and I think that we would have, although we haven't discussed this, I would think that in a response letter, we would have an obligation to tell that requester the reason why we need additional time, which is specifically, your materials may contain personal information that may be redacted and have been sent to, and name the originating agency, and let them know that as soon as we get the information back from the originating agency, we will respond in kind to your request. I would believe that practically, in that kind of situation, that would be the kind of response that we would owe to the originating requester. I don't think that the law, either IPRA or the Public Records Act, gives us the ability to shift the burden of responding to that IPRA request to the originating agency. I think that my opinion is it's still, I think, our responsibility to respond. However, for the reasons that I've already stated and for, I think, the acknowledgement that this commission has, another agency may be more equipped to know who was or was not a victim, who was or was not a witness in one of these kind of case files, and that's not going to be our call, because I would anticipate when archivists are looking at a case file, they're seeing names, and without any other identifying information, if an archivist makes a mistake and lets a name go unredacted, perhaps, there could be real-world consequences to that action, as well as potentially legal consequences for not redacting the information that the law tells us that we should have to redact.
Mr. Chairman, I appreciate your response, and I agree. I think it's important to communicate with the requester what we're doing as far as delegating to the other entity, but I think the responsibility still lies with the maintainer of those records. Thank you for that.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Ortiz, to add one point to that, and that I agree entirely with what my colleagues have said so far. I think that it might also be prudent, now that this agreement with the courts has been made and possession of these records has been transferred or they're in the process, of actually not doing what other states and the feds have done, for the simple reason that they are grappling with these things on the back end. Mm-hmm. And the logical, or at least the extreme effect of this, is litigation. Mm-hmm. If we have an opportunity to serve the interests of the people of New Mexico through public access, which I'm a huge advocate of providing, and at the same time an opportunity to rethink and not make the same mistakes that other jurisdictions have made, I'm in favor of that approach. The process of that is going to be collaborative, no doubt. And as the Supreme Court state law librarian, and in privity, if you will, with the custodians who transferred those things to you, I think there's a handshake to be made there. Mm-hmm.
Mr. Hunter.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Ortiz, and Secretary Ortiz, I think your point's well taken, and I can tell you that in fact, IPRA does provide that opportunity and obligation to notify the requestor that additional time is required based on the circumstances that have to take place before the production can be made available. Mm-hmm. And so that's very standard in the process. Now, the challenge is to make sure that we have a system in place that flags those requests and flags those delays, mm-hmm. and then make sure that we're closing the loop on the back end so that we can continue to comply with whatever obligations we set forth in our initial response.
Yes.
So again, process is going to be of substantial importance to make sure these don't fall through the cracks, so to speak. To your point, I think that Dr. Hendricks, I think that it is going to be time for us to revisit whatever agreement was in place prior to this legislation being passed, and have the courts back to the table and redetermine whether or not that agreement needs to be amended, and whether or not it needs to be rediscussed and reconsidered based on the obligations that are going to be set forth under this policy and that are initiated by the legislation. I would hope and I would think that the courts would be agreeable to at least come back to the table and talk to us, because I think their agenda is not much different than ours. But from a practical standpoint, the obligation, I think, has just been increased exponentially than when this agreement was entered into with the courts. Even not knowing the full history of that agreement, I suspect that that's true. So I would ask that we consider that conversation. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Any other questions or comments from the board? Just have you email for 1 second. Are there any questions of Mr. Ortiz from the audience? Okay, thank you very much, Mr. Ortiz. Ms. Majors?
Mr. Chairman, members of the commission, I'm Melanie Majors. I'm the executive director of the New Mexico Foundation for Open Government, and thank you for this opportunity to speak with you today. We, just to give you a little update on the IPRA law, section 14-2-8 specifically says you may not ask a requester what they're going to do with the record. In spite of whatever laws or policies the State Archives has in place, the law specifically says you may not ask for it. And I think it's about page 10 or 11. The other thing that you need to be aware of is electronic records. People can view those without having to actually physically touch them. So that's an issue that we have to think about too when you're working on this. We really appreciate this opportunity to talk to you as much as we appreciated the opportunity to speak with Mr. Hendricks and his staff a few weeks ago about this. We know that your office, this office, wasn't consulted on the amendment, and just in the instance of full disclosure, FOG opposed this bill. We've opposed it for many years, and we opposed it again this year. But the amendment did sail through the legislature in spite of our opposition. The archives, we believe at FOG that the archive office lacks both the staff and the expertise in this area, and we are particularly concerned about compliance with IPRA and how to properly redact court records. And we believe that it's best to turn the records back to the originating agency and have them do it, but then again, we run into time. Under the Inspection of Public Records Act, once a record request is received by an office, the receiving office has 3 days to respond, either to provide the record or to let the requester know that they have gotten the request, and they cannot respond within the 3 days. The law also specifies, and it's not three working days or three over weekend days, it's 3 days. The rule also requires that the records be provided to the requester by the 15th day. If they are not provided to a requester by the 15th day, then the records custodian of the agency that received the original request must send a letter to the requester saying that the request is overly burdensome and they cannot comply. As we know, that's where the problems often lie, is people will say the request is overly burdensome as a matter of course, instead of going and getting the actual record and letting people look at it. I know there's issues with people looking at historic records because they're touching things that maybe we don't want them to touch. However, the Inspection of Public Records Act lets people inspect the record. Doesn't mean they make a copy of it and let me inspect the copy, it means they inspect the record. We were down at City Hall in Albuquerque about a month ago, and the City Hall records are all in bound volumes in a room, and you can go in and open them and touch them, and they are full of some incredibly interesting information. Really, really great. Just to back up a little bit, the New Mexico legislature, in its infinite wisdom in 1978, passed one of the most comprehensive Inspection of Public Records Acts in the nation. New Mexico can be proud of its Inspection of Public Records Act because we don't fall on 50th. We usually fall in the top 10 and sometimes in the top 5. We have 12 exceptions to IPRA. Some states have as many as 400. That doesn't make a record public. And that's one of the things that at FOG that we constantly are looking at is how can we make sure that the process to get a record complies with the law. We're not unsympathetic to this problem, and we want you to remember the timelines. We also want you to remember that any proposal that requires requesters to state their intended usage is a clear violation. We've discussed the ambiguity of the amendment. We've talked about victims' confidentiality no longer being applicable. As a former news person myself, we never used victims' of heinous crimes, et cetera, in our news stories. That is still a policy that is used by the news media. However, other people may want to access records and use them for other reasons, and we don't have control over the general public. As I said, we really appreciated the opportunity. I think pretty much all of our objections were stated by Kip Purcell, who is a former FOD president and a member of our executive board. And if you have any questions, I'm more than happy to talk with you about that.
Okay, first we'll go to the board. Are there any questions of Ms. Majors?
Mr. Chairman, Ms. Majors, just for my clarification on the three-day calculation. So let's say that the agency receives an IPRA request on a Friday, and you mentioned calendar days. So does the clock start on that Friday, meaning Friday day one?
I consider it the Friday day one. Some people consider the Saturday day one, but I consider the Friday as day one.
So technically the 3 day would be on a Sunday by your calculation, correct?
Pretty close.
Yeah.
Really?
Unless you receive it at 5 o'clock, and then there's nothing you can do at that point because most of the state agencies are closed at 5 o'clock on a Friday.
Okay, thank you.
The other thing you need to be aware of, if you have received a request and it doesn't go to exactly to your records custodian, you need to make sure that that person gets it because the time has already started.
So the day of receipt, really, Ms. Major, because my question is that stable?
Right. And we understand 5 o'clock on Friday. We get that. I've been a contractor to state agencies, and 5 o'clock on Fridays, you could let a cannon off of some of those offices. Those people have already worked 60 hours that week. They've gone home, mm-hmm. But you have to be aware of that.
Are there any other questions?
Mr. Chairman, Ms. Majors, I'm gonna ask you the same question I asked Mr. Ortiz, and that is, despite opposition to the bill passed. And the question remains, what's the staff and administration of State Archives to do?
Comply with the law. And we have to work out a way to do that.
Pardon me, Ms. Majors, without a rule here. You're advocating against the rule, I think, for some good reasons. I appreciated Mr. Purcell's letter. But that does not leave us in a position to comply with IPRA. It only leaves us in a position to review policy in order to come into compliance. What would your position be, or the position of FOG, to assist State Archives?
We'd like to work with State Archives and see if we could come up with a rule that would work with you. And would like to offer our expertise to do that.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Are there any other questions of Ms. Majors from the board? How about any from the audience? Any questions for Ms. Majors? Thank you very much. Are there any more comments from the audience? Any other questions about this particular amendment? Okay, if there are no more questions, we'll move to close the hearing. Has everyone in the room signed the attendance sheet? Great, thank you. At this time, the attendance sheet shall be marked as an exhibit and entered into the record. Thank you. Somebody's grabbing that. Nope. There we go. Thank you very much, sir.
We are short a few signatures.
Oh, yes.
Mr. Chairman, had I known that Pog was in the room, I wouldn't have waxed and waned about how much I respected them. I'd like to, strip them from the record.
Mr. Auditor, I thought that's precisely what.
That's either a double win or a double win.
Right. Thank you for your work, Ms. Majors.
Thank you. Okay, thank you very much. Exhibit K, the sign-in sheets for today's meeting are hereby admitted into the record. So any rules adopted by the Commission of Public Records or the State Records Administrator will be filed in accordance with the State Rules Act and New Mexico Register publication deadlines. Any rules not adopted may be posted for future discussion at a definite time in the future or may be postponed indefinitely. I'd like to thank everyone present for their participation and attendance today. Let the record show that this hearing was adjourned at 10:52 a.m.